There are over 100 islands in Puget Sound, but there's something on McNeil Island that makes it different.
The island itself is fairly picturesque. There's all kinds of small wildlife that live out there because there's no predators at this point and very little human impact. When you ask me what McNeil Island is, that's I don't know if you meant the island or if you meant the facility.
Well, I'm wondering if this is just a slip of the tongue, but you said there were no predators out there.
That's public defender Andrew Morrison talking with Jeff Entman of the local podcast Here Be Monsters. And the facility they mentioned is the Special Commitment Center, where the state of Washington sends and holds people who are diagnosed as sexually violent predators. Now, the Special Commitment Center on McNeil Island isn't a prison, but the people who are sent there are often kept there for life. Entman and his co-producer, Bethany Denton, devoted a recent episode of Here Be Monsters to the Special Commitment Center on McNeil Island. And Bill Radke asked them how the state of Washington can legally hold people there, even people found guilty of committing terrible crimes with no prison sentence involved. We'll hear from Bethany first.
So the legal justification is that civil commitment is intended to be rehabilitative and not punitive. And that means that because the Special Commitment Center, for instance, offers treatment, it does not violate double jeopardy, which means that it's not strictly a punishment, a continued punishment for someone who has already served time.
There have been a lot of Supreme Court cases. SCC residents themselves have challenged this all the way to Supreme Court. One was claiming inadequate treatment, but again, it was dismissed because treatment was being offered, regardless of how sparse that treatment was.
Let's meet somebody in this situation. A character in your story is Chris, and for years he was defined as a sexually violent predator. And on the podcast, you withheld his last name for his protection and his family's protection. He was ultimately released from the facility on McNeil Island after his trial. Why were you drawn to Chris's story?
What I particularly found really fascinating about Chris is that he was sent to the Special Commitment Center when he was 18 years old. He had been convicted and served a 2-year sentence as a juvenile in a juvenile facility, but then was sent subsequently to the SCC on McNeil Island, the Special Commitment Center. And so, now he's 36. This is a person who has never used the internet, never used a cell phone. He never had a job. In a lot of ways, he's 36 going on 19. And so this is a person who is about to embark on adulthood for the first time really ever in his life. He in a lot of ways is a stunted adolescent. And so that part of the story was just interesting in and of itself.
Now, Chris is he did the crime, right? He's mm-hmm. classified as a sexually violent predator. He's hurt a lot of people. He admitted to sexually assaulting his sisters and many other people, and he was ultimately released after his trial. One of the central questions of your story is whether or not people can change after doing something reprehensible. So what kind of answers did you come across?
This is a topic that just has so many different perspectives on it. When I was originally thinking about what kind of questions we could ask about this topic, I assumed there were just these two perspectives. One is that we're just kind of these old babies that are walking around with layers of ways to cope with the different stressors that exist in the world.
Meaning those coping ways are not going to change? They're fixed?
Well, the coping ways would change, but the fundamental deviances that we have, the fundamental insecurities that we have are the same. The other perspective that I ran across, or I thought existed, were that humans are just entirely fluid all throughout our lives, and that we're just constantly shifting and reinventing ourselves. And throughout the course of reporting this, I came to realize that this isn't the only two options there are. Of course, there are many ways to view the ways in which people change. But the two main people that we talked to, one was a public defender named Andrew Morrison. The second was the head of the Sexually Violent Predators Unit at King County Prosecutors named Jennifer Ritchie. And the two of them had very differing perspectives on Chris. They had very differing perspectives on criminal justice, and they had very differing perspectives on that question of how do people change throughout their lives, or do they? So when we talked to the prosecutor in interview, Jennifer Ritchie, she told us, you know, people can change. People do change. She just didn't think that Chris did.
In our experience, because of his lack of treatment and because of our experience in seeing his history, you know, I'm not going to say we should be afraid of Christopher, because I'm certainly not going to, you know, fear monger about Christopher, but it is keeping our fingers crossed. I mean, I hope to God to never see Christopher again, because if I see Christopher again, it means that Christopher is taking part in activities that are highly, highly risky behaviors.
And the public defender, Andrew Morrison, when we talked to him in interview, he kind of thought this whole idea of sorting things out into this dichotomy, he thought that was kind of a bogus way of approaching things. And what he told us instead is, he said, people respond to their environment. And he thinks that instead of locking people up on this island, we're going to have better results if we invest this money that we're spending on people in their communities and into individual people instead.
I think that, you know, in terms of becoming healthy people, what it's really about is learning ways to cope successfully without hurting other people. Human beings are social creatures. There is no one that is an island unto themselves that is better off isolated, who functions better that way. And the further we get away from that, the more unhealthy and the more dangerous we become.
As far as long-term recidivism goes, we just have a couple studies to look at here. And there's a big one that followed a large set of sex offenders that were all released in the year 1994, and it's kind of followed them ever since. And what that study found was that sex offenders as a whole are much less likely than other kinds of criminals to reoffend. That also has to be understood through the filter of knowing that, as Jennifer Ritchie rightly points out, that sex offenses are underreported. So it's kind of this confusing area where you can't take a statistic and apply it to a single person, especially a person as unique as Christopher, in that he only offended as a child. And there's some evidence, again, I don't think Beth or I are the right people to comment on its scientific validity, but there is data that suggests that juvenile only sex offenders are completely different than their adult counterparts. So as far as like this question that I think a lot of people ask when they listen to this piece, is Chris going to reoffend again? It's a hard question to answer with data, but you can kind of get these little glimpses of the truth. Predicting the future is a dangerous game, especially when it's specific, especially when it's about a person. But that's essentially what the jury was asked to do.
That was Jeff Empman and Bethany Denton. They're the Seattle-based producers of the podcast Here Be Monsters from KCRW's Independent Producer Project. You can hear the full episode on McNeil Island and check out photos from their story on our website.